Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts.
Rise and shine, fantasy players. It is a beautiful day in the neighborhood. Friday, July 20th. Let's cock-a-doodle do it. This is Roto Experts in the Morning right here on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I am your host, Dane Martinez. They call me Speeds the Spitting Statistician. And as usual, I am overjoyed to be joined by my man, FSWA Hall of Famer, the King, Scott Angle. Scotty, it's a Friday, summertime Friday, casual Fridays, maybe a half day for people going into work. Feeling good about the weekend. How you feeling, Scotty?
I'm feeling like I exhaled. You know, I finally finished editing the most comprehensive article and exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package history yesterday. Check it out. It's live now. The 20 burning questions and answers for the 2018 fantasy football season on rotoexperts.com by award-winning writer Chris Mitchell. Enter the King at checkout for a special discount.
Absolutely. 20 burning questions. Whose ADP will be falling? When should you draft the defense? All the things you need to know heading into fantasy football in 2018 to help you win your leagues and win that cash. You got to go on and get the Roto Experts exclusive Edge fantasy football package. You can enter the promo code THEKING at checkout. Scotty, you make any progress on being able to enter El Rey at checkout?
Do that soon.
Got
to wait for somebody who handles that to come back from vacation.
Fair enough. But I want us to be able to,
How do you spell El Rey?
Gotcha.
E-L-R-A-Y? What is it?
Yeah, put that E in place of the A and you'll be good to go. But, you know, I want us to be able to
The El Rey Network, yeah.
There you go. Accessible.
That's where I watch old episodes of The Incredible Hulk.
Really? Well, yeah. You know, you could be streaming all of these things now, Scotty. You don't have to worry about specific channels, but I digress. Everybody getting ready to get into the weekend. Remember, you can get the exclusive Edge package. Enter the promo code THEKING. You could always holler at us during the show at 844-843-6879. You could also follow us on Twitter at Spittin' Speeds, at Scotty Roto X. All right, Scotty, let's get into it. You know, here's where I wanted to start. I wanted to start with Allen Robinson today because it looks like he's going to be cleared. He's going to be a quote-unquote full go for training camp, right? And this is one of the indications you got to look for when people are coming back from injury. We talked about Kenneth Dixon coming back earlier in the week. Deshaun Watson's going to be a full go, and I think that is very interesting. Scott, when I look at your wide receiver rankings, in PPR formats, you have Allen Robinson ranked number 22. And I got to tell you something, Scotty. I thought he would have been a little bit higher. I've seen him a little bit higher. You do have him about two or three spots behind the consensus, behind his ADP. For me, health was going to be the issue with AR-15. And if he's healthy and a full go, I think he might be able to be a little bit higher. I mean, Scotty, what I always say about Allen Robinson is in his history, he had the unique ability to make Blake Bortles look good. He also had the unique ability to make Christian Hackenberg look good. He has the potential to be a wide receiver the Bears have never had, you know, or haven't had in a very long time, get 1,000 yards potentially. And we talk about how the Chicago offense with Matt Nagy coming over from Kansas City, we're trying to make comparisons with Trey Burton to Travis Kelce, Tariq Cohen to Tyreek Hill, things like that. The Kansas City Chiefs never had an outside big-time ex-wide receiver like Allen Robinson. I was a little surprised that you had him at 22 like you did. What are your concerns about Allen Robinson maybe even being a high or mid-level wide receiver too? And, you know, what do you expect out of Allen Robinson in this new offense?
Well, you're making it sound like I rank him 72 rather than 22.
No. You have him as a back-end wide receiver, too. I think it's like 22 or 23.
Yeah, I think that's fair when you consider, you know, that Allen Robinson has really not done anything since 2015. You know, 2016 was a disappointment. 2017, he was hurt. Not only do you have to be concerned about health. Look, I admit all the talent was there and everything you say.
Okay.
But not only is he coming back from an injury, but, you know, he's with a completely new team and a completely new quarterback. So I think there's going to be an adjustment period, not only physically, but mentally. So I think like a back-end wide receiver, too, with the potential to be a mid-range wide receiver, too, I think is fair. You know, I'm not going to put him in the wide receiver one or high-end wide receiver two discussion. I just can't feel as comfortable about Allen Robinson as I do with guys ranked ahead of him. I don't think it's an incredibly low rating.
Okay, fair enough. Can I ask you, and you may not be able to pull this up right now or anything like that, but I guess it was 2 years ago, Scotty. People were drafting Allen Robinson as a wide receiver one. You know, like a couple of years ago,
coming up a 1,400-yard double-digit touchdown season.
Absolutely. Yeah. I understand. Of course. I understand that. So, and then he got hurt, right? And then he got hurt in that or had a bad year with Jacksonville. Like, what changed? Because the player, I mean, there's the health, right, and the ACL. But other than that, like, do you think that's a skill issue, or do you think it's just an adjustment kind of issue?
When he had that bad 2016 season, he was just incredibly inconsistent.
Right.
It's like defenses were really, like, clamping down on him, and, you know, Bortles is not the most accurate guy.
Right.
You know, my memory's a little fuzzy on it, but I do remember that people just kept popping him into lineup, and he just was not producing every week. And then last year, he got hurt. So you're talking about a guy who's, you know, two-plus years removed from his banner season, and it's only been one season out of four as well. So I can't boost him to, say, number 15. Yeah, I think 22 is very fair when you talk about, you know, you can't say you don't have any concerns about Allen Robinson, and that's why he is at number 22.
All right, fair enough. You know, the way I approached it was that, for me, the major concern or the biggest concern was the health, right? And so when I then see the news that he's ready to go, that alleviates one of the biggest concerns.
Where would you rank him now that you know that he's healthy?
Sure, let me look at your ranks. So let me look at your ranks. You know, I would have Allen Robinson. I would have him ahead of Demaryius Thomas. And I would have him, when I look at those Cleveland guys that you have above him, Landry and Gordon, for some reason, I think, like, you know, I think that's almost like when you put them right back to back like that, Scott, I think that on some level is like hedging your bet because, you know, one of them I think will be better than the other. And so I'd say I'd take Allen Robinson ahead of whichever Cleveland Brown wide receiver is the second one. You know what I mean?
Who's the second one to you?
To me, it depends on the setting. I think Landry Landry scores the most points in PPR settings of the Browns wide receivers, and I think Gordon would score more in standard.
So in PPR, which by default to,
right.
You're going to say Landry.
In PPR, I would have Robinson ahead of Gordon, but not ahead of Landry, because I think Landry would outscore Gordon.
So basically you're saying you'd rank Allen Robinson about number 18.
Yeah, I'd have him. Yeah, roughly.
Yeah, so
roughly, I'd have about four spots.
We're talking about
a difference
of four spots. It's not that big of a difference.
No, you're right. We're splitting hairs, and I mean, at any time, you know, and that's something that's important, Scott. Let's talk about that for a hot second. You know, when we talk about rankings, you know. And that's the case, and we say that a lot. Remember with, like, these tight ends, right? How we all expect maybe the gap between, say, tight end 10 and tight end 15.
Time out. Sorry. I have Allen Robinson number 16 in PPR.
That's not what I'm staring at right now.
That's what I'm looking at.
That's interesting. Okay. I will send you a screenshot or something like that. I'll send you one, too. Okay. For me, what I'm staring at, you have Juju Smith-Schuster as number 16. And Landry 17, Gordon 18. I'm looking at PPR settings.
Hold on. And what's the updated date on this?
The one I'm looking at? There's an issue. This one I'm staring at says updated only June 26th. So that's probably old.
You're looking at a cash version. Mine is updated 7/9.
I wonder, though, Scotty. I mean, okay. So there's a technical thing that we have to figure out.
I think you need to clear your cookies.
I mean, I'm going to the premium package, and then it's the same thing. So we will see. So you do, in fact, think then that Allen Robinson is a little bit better than that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I have right ahead of Tyreek Hill, Golden Tate, Josh Gordon, all the guys you mentioned.
Interesting. All right. So in fact, you agree.
Right behind Stephon Diggs, but I can't rank him higher than I have him for the reasons that I said.
Okay, fair enough, but that is a difference. So that's interesting. We got to talk about this technological stuff here, Scotty, because I just did it again, and it's weird. It flashed like 7, whatever, and then literally reverted back. So that's interesting.
That happened to me, mm-hmm. The tech guys would always tell me, clear your cache.
That's interesting. I mean, but the thing is like, yeah, whatever. We don't need to talk about the IT of it all right now. But the fact remains, though,
I think it's an issue with your computer.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I disagree, but that's okay. But what I'm saying is what's interesting is where I thought he should be is actually where you do, in fact, have him then. Because you said you're moving him in this updated one that apparently I cannot see. You do have him a little bit higher than 22. You have him more in line with where I did kind of suspect. But the other – what I want to zoom out about this, when we mention Allen Robinson or others, I guess my question for you generally, I hear people say that. I hear experts say all the time, Scott, there's going to be this adjustment period, whether it's maybe, Chicago, whether it's a team like San Francisco that we talk about who have some adjustments with Jimmy G, Jarek McKinnon, and the rest, maybe in Washington there's an adjustment period, new quarterback, rookie running back, Richardson, those sort of things. When people say that, and I know it's got to vary, obviously, Scott, but how long is this adjustment period when people are saying, oh, they got to build chemistry together. Oh, they got to adjust to a new scheme. Oh, there's a new quarterback. Like in Minnesota, they've got a new quarterback, but people still have Thielen and Diggs both rated as high-end wide receiver twos. You know what I mean? Like there's how much does that matter, Scott?
I think it matters as for what the period is. It's not this, you can't put a timetable on it. It's not the same, It's like, but what you're doing basically is saying that there can be an adjustment period that you have to be aware of. For some guys, they might be able to step in and play right away together, but for other guys, it might take several weeks or a half a season. What I'm saying is, you have to take that into account when you're doing your rankings.
No, absolutely. I'm not saying this about you, Scott Angle. I just think at some point, I feel like it's almost a cop out that people say, like experts say, and they kind of pick and choose when they want to use that as a part of the argument. It's a very convenient thing to say, oh, well, there's going to be an adjustment period when it fits whoever that person is, their narrative already on what they project or what they anticipate. Because, there's a lot of situations.
I think it's the other way around, though, because you have to take the factors into account and then project it. I don't think it's the other way around.
All right. I guess, people – it's one of those things people can go to very conveniently, but then I'm trying to be consistent if that's
something that does
matter.
Maybe they go to it because, it's something you have – it's a large factor you have to take into account, not just as a cop-out.
All right, so or just we'll remember that the next time we talk about a team that maybe does have an adjustment period, but we are higher on them. Let's keep it moving, though. We talked a little bit about Allen.
Where's an example of that?
What's that?
Where's an example of that?
I just said Minnesota. Why is there not an adjustment period for Kirk Cousins?
Never said there was an adjustment period for Kirk
Cousins. But people still have his wide receiver, but people are still ranking him in QB7, right? So why is there an adjustment, less of an adjustment period for him than there is, let's say, for Alex Smith, than there is, let's say, for Jimmy G or anybody like that? And again, Scott,
I'll tell you why. And
go ahead.
Because Cousins might start off, there's a possibility for 2 or 3 games, you might scuffle, but with those kind of weapons and everything around him, eventually you feel like he's going to succeed. And, he's put up some very good numbers in the past. When you look at Jimmy Garoppolo's got no real track record compared to Kirk Cousins. And Alex Smith has a track record of being mostly a mediocre quarterback. So that's why you're splitting the difference. You're not just looking – I think if Kirk Cousins wasn't going an adjustment period, Lord, you might even have him higher than you have him now.
I mean, all right, we shall see as we move along. Let's keep it moving, though, Scotty.
I want to go back to something, though, from yesterday. Sorry to interrupt you, though, but
go ahead. I'll just throw my rundown out. It doesn't matter.
I just want to clarify something to get back to you what you want to do. I heard you on the second hour talking with Jake and saying that, you know, my comments about Lamar Jackson and saying that that's not the kind of guy I wanted to be Michael Vick. You asked me that question from an NFL perspective. And I heard Jake, you disagreeing with me, saying from a fantasy perspective, the way you presented the question to me was from a pure NFL perspective. Now, from a pure NFL perspective, I don't want Lamar Jackson to be Michael Vick. From a fantasy perspective, I have no problem with that. I just wanted to make that clear.
Okay, fair enough. I think I was, in fact, asking you the question from both perspectives, and we talked about the answer from both perspectives. Even Kenny in Philly talked about it. You know, he talked about it from an NFL perspective, talking about how, like, the fans would be exciting, something like that. And from a fantasy perspective, I mentioned to you, you were like, what has he done? And I mentioned, well, he was a first-round pick there for a while, and I was mentioning the entire time both the fantasy perspective and the NFL perspective, Scott. But it's
well, maybe erroneously, you know, I was focusing just on the NFL perspective. But, you know, if he turns out to be Michael Vick from a fantasy perspective, don't have a problem with that. But from an NFL perspective, wouldn't want it.
Okay, fair enough. There we go. As we keep it moving, more pieces of news out there. Vance Joseph, head coach over there in Denver, says, listen, he's coming out and saying now that the team will use, quote unquote, 2 to 3 main backs. Scotty, you know, we've talked about these timeshares before. A lot of people think that Royce Freeman has a chance to usurp Devontae Booker or leapfrog Devontae Booker in this backfield. I wonder if these comments out of Vance Joseph give you any kind of cause for pause. I know we expect this to be a timeshare anyway. But if, like, where would you, how, you know, project this a little bit for me? Do you think it's a 60-40 kind of thing? You think Booker is the lead and then maybe Foreman kind of grows in his share as the season goes along? How do you project this Denver running back room to shake out?
Well, it's like when we talked about fantasy baseball with closers. Sometimes you say, okay, you know, who's going to be the guy? And that has to be earned. You know, it's not something that can just be straight predicted. But you have to take Freeman over Booker when you look at the fact that how high they drafted Freeman and, you know, he's coming in, you know, with a clean slate here, whereas Booker was a bit of a disappointment last year. You know, I don't think you can predict how much of a split it's going to be. That has to be worked out. But, you know, you have to keep it as simple as you're going to draft Freeman first because you believe that he has more of the clean opportunity than Booker does.
Okay, so and help me out with this, Scott, because sometimes this is another thing I hear, like, not necessarily you, but, like, people are saying, like, oh, we have to wait and see it play out. Like, isn't that part of the reason that fans and listeners, like, listen to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network and hear projections and stuff? Because they want to know, they want to get insight as to, you know, what experts think the timeshare will be. So isn't it kind of like when we say, like, oh, we don't know, like, isn't that our job as experts to kind of predict this, to kind of analyze it, to kind of get early with it? Like, anybody can kind of wait and see how it plays out. We're trying to give fans the edge to get ahead of this so that they can kind of predict it accurately, make the right decisions before the rest of their competition. So I like how you say, you know, that for me, though, like, you didn't just say, oh, we have to wait and see it play out. You said that, but then you also said, Scotty, right now you draft Freeman ahead of Booker, giving actually some kind of you're planting a flag somewhere, right? You do think Freeman is the one to go first, right?
Yeah, sometimes fantasy players want answers that don't concretely exist. But then it's our job, you know, as the analyst to say, okay, you know, still, though, who would you take?
Right.
Now, I can't predict, you know, whether it's going to be 60-40 or 66-34, 67-33 or 50-50, you know. But, you know, looking at reading all the tea leaves, as the cliche goes, and I hate to use cliches, but I just did, you know, reading all the tea leaves, it leads me to believe that Freeman's going to be the guy. because I think they drafted him that high because I don't think they believe that they have that guy in-house. Now, it's sometimes, you know, look, Devontae Booker is not a seasoned veteran, but sometimes teams do that. They'll bring in a young guy, but they'll also have the seasoned veteran in case the young guy fails. And I think Denver, to a lesser degree, is doing that. Yeah. You know, they're protecting themselves with insurance there, and what they're saying publicly is that the job has to be earned by these running backs. They have to play it out in the preseason training camp and in exhibition games to determine who's going to be the lead back. And it was interesting. I was reading yesterday, everybody's like banking on C.J. Anderson to compliment Christian McCaffrey. Well, I was reading yesterday about how you can't count out Cameron Artis Payne out. Some of these things in sports just have to be worked out. But yeah, we have to take a stand as fantasy experts and say, if somebody's going to win out, who's going to be that guy? And in this case, it's going to be Royce Freeman.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Scotty. I like that. I know you maybe don't like the saying, but this idea is people are trusting us to read the tea leaves accurately. You know what I mean? Right. And like we have to acknowledge that it is reading the tea leaves. You know, we only have certain data points at this point in time. It's not like it's week five of the season already, but we are the experts because our reading of the tea leaves sometimes are better than most. And so some of the factors that are involved in that, as you mentioned, Scott, like the organization decided to invest at least draft capital in this kid, Royce Freeman, right? So that's a tea leaf that we're going to read. You know, the other thing is, remember, I would say, I don't know if you agree, Scott, but last year, I believe the Denver Broncos organizationally like wanted Devontae Booker to kind of grab hold of that job over C.J. Anderson, and he kind of was unable to do so. You know what I mean? He never really took hold of that, and to me, that's another tea leaf to read, in my opinion, which may inspire the Broncos to go ahead and spend the draft capital on Freeman. So I'm reading it the same way as you, Scotty. I like Royce the 5'9 Freeman, to take a nickname from our guy Jake Seeley. Let me ask you something else. Let's read some more. Before we go on, though,
it also compare it to something during the regular season. People ask me, like on the Slack chat channel in the Inclusive Edge package, when's this guy coming back? When do you expect him back? And I can't give an exact answer.
Everyone's
body's
different.
Tell you how a person heals. I get that. They want an exact date when a guy is returned. Sometimes the information doesn't exist. So I say, look, expect to play without the guy until further notice.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And remember, we do always don't forget about our friends at Inside Injuries. Okay, our guy Dr. A. Now, obviously, you can't predict injuries. We don't know. But the same kind of thing. You know, Scott, you, I, our guy All In Kid, we can read those tea leaves, right? And our guy Dr. A, because he is an expert and a professional in the medical field, we trust him to read those tea leaves, right? It's the same kind of thing. But we trust the experts in our field to try to get as accurate of a reading of those tea leaves as possible. Scotty, I'm going to ask you to read some more tea leaves, and it is with the New York Jets wide receiver group. Okay, listen, I'm talking like it's such a mishmash, Scotty. I mean, there's something I think like literally like 13 or 14 wide receivers on their roster right now. I heard buzz that potentially Robbie Anderson is primed to explode this year. I mean, he fell just shy of 1,000 yards as the wide receiver one for this team last year. But here's the thing. I think there's so many options, Scotty, that I don't think I'd trust any one of these guys and draft them as like a wide out three, even, to be quite honest, because we don't know the tea leaves here. I mean, think about it, Scott. You got Robbie Anderson, right? You got Jermaine Kearse, who was decent at times last year. They go out and sign Terrell Pryor. They have Quincy Enunwa coming back from injury. That's already four, and that doesn't count any of the kids that they've drafted over the last couple of years, guys like Chad Hansen and Ardarius Stewart, who they kind of like. They also have guys like Andre Roberts and Lucky Whitehead, who have been fringe NFL players or special teams guys before. That's like eight already, and I think there are more. Scotty, help me read these tea leaves. People are saying Robbie Anderson's going to explode, but this is such a herd that I don't know that there's any value with Robbie Anderson because there's a lot of options here. Help me read these tea leaves for the Jets wide receiving core.
Well, I think you know, guys are like struggling to write stuff at this time of year. Yeah, the beat reporters. To me, Robbie Anderson breaking out, that's not any news.
Okay.
I think, you know, we saw signs of it last year, you know, but what else are we going to do with this receiving crew right here? Quincy Enunwa is going to play in the slot, but I don't think he's going to be fantasy worthy. Jermaine Kearse is, you know, he's a better NFL player always than he's been a fantasy player. And then you got Terrell Pryor. Maybe they're jumping up the depth chart. Right now it's just, you know, draft Robbie Anderson as a wide receiver three with upside. A noon one, maybe a guy in the 20-round draft or a best ball. Somebody to keep your eye on. It's free agency. And, you know, the same with Pryor, who can, you know, if he's healthy, can probably vault ahead this year.
Okay, so yeah, there's a lot of options there. We're going to have to keep our eye out on that. Last thing I'll say here, when we're on the Jets, when we only have a minute or two until we go to break, Scotty. Darrell Revis announced his retirement, I think, a couple of days ago, and I just saw this thing. Remember, we had Revis Island. You know, a lot of people worried about his holdouts and his contract stuff, but I saw this on Twitter. Check this out, Scott. He had three games against Terrell Owens, three games against Randy Moss, and three games against Calvin Johnson, okay? That's nine games. Those three probable Hall of Fame wide receivers in nine games against them, those three of them combined in nine games, Scotty, for 21 catches and 191 yards. In nine games. That's averaging pretty much like three catches for something like 20 yards against them. And in those nine games, those three wide receivers combined for a grand total of two touchdowns. And Darrell Revis had two picks against them, one of them going back the other way to the house. That's what he did against Terrell Owens, Randy Moss, and Calvin Johnson in his career. In my opinion, one of the best cornerbacks I've ever seen outside of Deion Sanders. When we come back, Scotty, I want to get your thoughts on kind of where Darrell Revis may rank all time in that secondary. And also, who are the heir apparents? Who are the best cornerbacks in the league right now? Because you got to know about that when your wide receivers face them in fantasy football. We're off and running. Roto Experts in the Morning, the king and the spitting statistician. Come on right back.
Are you new to Daily Fantasy? Are you a veteran? Either way, you can better your chances of winning money, and lots of it, by going to DailyRoto.com. Multiple people have become millionaires thanks to the guys at Daily Roto. Why not take advice from the experts? You can become a millionaire too. Just go to DailyRoto.com to rock Daily Fantasy Sports.
Loves nice better. Yeah, get it, Scotty. Roto Experts in the Morning right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Remember, if you want to join the show, the number to call is 844-843-6879. And remember, we're not doing as much on baseball on DFS. There was the Manny Machado trade. Brad Hand moved to the Cleveland Indians. It's going to be interesting. He's a lefty reliever. They have Andrew Miller coming back very soon. Another stud lefty in that bullpen. Watch out for Cleveland. But I also want to remind you guys, listen. Okay, if you still want to win some cash playing DFS baseball, okay, go on over to DailyRoto.com. They got everything you need to win your leagues and win that cash. And remember, okay, we're done with the trivia challenge, but you can still go and potentially win two tickets to a 2018 World Series game by playing over there at Daily Roto. So find out, you know, learn more how you can help the fight against blood cancer, obviously, okay? Now, I say it all the time, when you hit 300, you become an all-star in baseball, but 330%, that is not the rate we need when people can find matching, you know, donors when they are struggling with this disease, okay? So go on over, find out how you can help our partnership with DKMS as we help the fight against blood cancer. Scotty, I was, before we went to the break, I was telling you about Darrell Revis' stats against like three Hall of Fame wide receivers of his generation. Absolutely ridiculous, in my opinion, that these guys, over the course of nine games, caught only 21 balls. That's like just over two a game. Had 191 yards combined in nine games. That's below 25 yards a game, you know, and I'm also reminded of a year where T.Y. Hilton was crushing it, and then in the playoffs, Darrell Revis held him to one catch for 1 yard. Best cornerback in my lifetime outside of Deion Sanders. Scotty, do you agree?
I think he's certainly in that conversation. You know, Deion Sanders and him have one thing in common, though, that I think you don't especially hear.
Mercenary for hire.
You know, especially, just as players, just as pure players. is that neither one of them were excellent tacklers. It's I remember like Deion's
didn't want to get dirty.
Deion's contemporary was Rod Woodson, who was a much better tackler. And you know, Brevis maybe like the best pure mirror cover corner that you ever saw. And yeah, you know, Gil Brandt, you know, recently ranked them, and you know, even though Gil hates my guts, I think you know, I love his work. He ranked Deion number one, Rod Woodson number two. I think Charles Woodson has to be in that conversation as well. And then I think you get into Richard Sherman, who's probably the best pure interceptor that the game has ever seen. You know, reader of quarterbacks in terms of like he couldn't shadow guys quite like, and he didn't have to like Deion
and that's the knock
Darrell
against
Revis.
Them.
But you know when he did have to, you know, he did the job. You know, he doesn't have to, but you know, nobody ever read a quarterback and picked off a pass and created that fear like Richard Sherman, and he's a better tackler than Revis. Who would I rather have, Sherman or Revis? I'd probably lean towards Revis, but you know, you're talking about like my top five right there.
Sure. Fair enough. And then, you know, you talk about Richard Sherman right now in the NFL. You know, you talk about Sherman. A lot of guys will think people like Patrick Peterson, but those guys even, Sherman, Peterson, those guys you have to admit are on the back nine, let's say, of their career, right? So I think about other guys that are maybe a little bit younger, and names that come to mind, I always mention when we talk about the Chargers that Casey Hayward was the number one PFF graded cornerback last year. I think about down in Jacksonville, not Jalen Ramsey, but the other side, AJ Bouye, who has been great over the last couple of seasons. I always like my man Rhodes closed up in Minnesota as well. Xavier Rhodes. Who do you think, not say the Petersons or Shermans or anybody who have a little bit of age on them, Scotty, but who are some of the new young cornerbacks that maybe some people don't know of, but you need to know because when your wide receivers are facing that team, it's a consideration you need to know. Who are some of those other great corners or secondaries to be conscious of this year, Scotty?
Yeah, I think you can't forget Darius Slay.
Sure, over there in big play game, Slay in Detroit.
You can't. And Marshawn Lattimore of the Saints is somebody else.
And Jason, you know, it's interesting.
Jason Verrett of the Chargers, too.
Also of the Chargers. Also of the Chargers. Yeah. Part of the reason why I really like the Chargers because they're going to have Verrett on one side, Hayward on the other. And don't forget, they also had a couple of other rookies last year. I think Desmond King, who performed well as a rookie. And I like that you bring up Slay and Lattimore because, you know, generally speaking, the layman fan, you know, the casual fan may think that just generally, oh, the Saints are a bad defense. Oh, the Lions are a bad defense. Because, like, over the course of the last 5 to 10 years, they were not known as strong defenses. So you may think that's something you can attack with a wide receiver. But do not forget about big play Slay and, of course, Marcus Lattimore, the first-round draft pick of the Saints from last year. Scotty, I talk about how people are we good on that, by the way? We good on cornerbacks?
Yeah, I think we are.
Good.
And, okay. You know, it's great to know. You know, fantasy wise, because you know, you want to know when your guys are facing it. For so many years, people would want to sit even guys like Calvin Johnson when they were facing Darrell Revis.
Mm-hmm. So it's definitely an important consideration, especially in, say, like DFS, right? Because in season long, right, let's say your wide receiver one is whoever it is, right? Davante Adams, Michael Thomas, whoever it is. In season long, you're not sitting these guys, right? Even if they're playing, you know, the Saints and Lattimore is going to be on them. You're not benching those guys in season long. But in DFS, it's very important to know that matchup. And to your point about Sherman also, and to know if these guys are guys that quote-unquote shadow and follow someone across the field, or if, like Richard Sherman, they stay on the right or left side no matter what. It's just important to note. Scotty.
Yeah, because, you know, when you were playing against a guy like Sherman, when guys were playing against him, he effectively shut down the entire half of the field.
And Aaron Rodgers didn't even look that side.
Yeah, excellent point right there, because you knew if your guy was going to be on that side of the field, you know, he probably wasn't going to hit 100 yards that day.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's definitely something to consider in the matchup. Now, Scotty, people can call us at 844-843-6879 if they want to join the show. Big shout out to our guy Kenny in Philly, who's been part of the fabric here of Roto Experts in the Morning. But I want to put up a poll, Scotty, and I need your help in building it. The way I wanted to ask this poll question was, I want to find out, who do fans think are the best running back wide receiver combo in the National Football League, right? And the easy answer is Lev Bell and Antonio Brown, right, Scott? You would agree with that?
Yes, but I'm curious as to why we want to know this fantasy-wise, with all respect, because you don't want to have two of those guys on the same team.
You don't? You wouldn't be happy to have Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown both on your roster?
No, because, you know, if Le'Veon Bell has a huge game, you know, that can cut into Antonio Brown. And then if there's a week that the Steelers score 13 points, if two of my superstar players are on the same team, well, I'm losing the game. You know, it's almost to me like, you know, when you do the quarterback wide receiver hookup thing, you know, which we have
stack.
The Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. You know, we even saw this with like some of the best offenses. What was it, 2 years ago? The Packers walked into Buffalo in a fantasy playoff game, and Aaron Rodgers and Jordy Nelson got shut down. So I don't like having two prominent guys from the same team on my fantasy roster.
Interesting, and that is definitely kind of a rule of thumb, you know. Do you want to kind of be all in with a certain offense, because then you kind of rise and fall as that offense goes? And then don't forget also, if you have a lot of people on the same team, the week that that team has a bye, you might be SOL, you know, in terms of what you can do in terms of flexibility with your bench if you have that loaded up. But Scotty, you know, sometimes we talk about things from the NFL perspective. Sometimes we talk about things from the fantasy perspective. Sometimes we put the fun and functional sports content and sing along with songs and talk about Kiss concerts and what we're doing over the weekend. So I still want to get your opinion on these wide receiver running back combos. And if we put Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown aside, I had four options that I thought were intriguing that I'd love to get your thought of on who is this best combo out there. And I say this because I've heard a lot of buzz after the draft, after all these people talk about Saquon Barkley and Odell Beckham, how they may form such a fearsome combination. We talk about the old triplets in Dallas with Emmitt Smith and Mike Irvin. You know, you talk about in Buffalo in the 90s with Thurman Thomas and Andre Reed, how this is a important thing. So I have a couple of options, and I want to see, do you think any of these combos are better than Saquon Barkley and Odell Beckham's potential? And I thought of three to measure up against the Giants. The first one is in Atlanta, where you have Julio Jones and Devontae Freeman. Then we talk about these Chargers with Melvin Gordon and Keenan Allen. And we also talk about the Arizona Cardinals with David Johnson and Larry Fitzgerald. Those are the ones that came to mind for me. Scotty, am I missing any of them? And do you think those combos are better than the potential new pair in New York with the Giants?
Julio, the problem with the Falcons guys is they don't score enough touchdowns, and I guess you could blame that a lot on Julio, right?
Yeah, I guess so. He has been underwhelming in the red zone over the last couple of years.
Yeah, he caught one pass in the red zone last year. Two of his other touchdowns – well, he got one touchdown pass in the red zone last year. Johnson and Fitzgerald, you know, that's they're still very, very effective together, and I like the Chargers combination, but – I don't think we can measure those kind of guys with Barkley and Beckham, because you're talking about two potential superstars there. To a lesser degree, you have Kareem Hunt and Tyreek Hill.
Yeah.
You also have Alvin Kamara and Michael Thomas, I think, is one that
that's interesting.
That was missed out on there.
That's interesting.
Outside of that, though, I can't really think of any other comp. Look, Dalvin Cook and, you know, the two wide receivers.
You'd have to choose which Viking,
That's not really a combo. There's not really a combo in Green Bay because of the running game.
Jamal Williams,
Yeah, I don't think any of these could really stand up to what potentially Barkley and Beckham can be together.
Interesting. And then you would think there's even a gap there to then Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown as the absolute stud combo. But the point that you make, I think, is a good one, Scott. You got to think about this when you, pardon the term, Jake, go all in on a certain team, right? Whether it be this QB wide receiver stack, whether it be multiple people on the same team, you're going to have those issues when and if they get shut down, or then certainly on the bye. I'm reminded, I did win a league once, Scotty, with two of my wide receivers being Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne. on the same team, you know, in Indianapolis. I have won a league like that, but you just can't get caught in one week, you know, where you start to wind up getting banged up. All right, Scotty, I want to ask you, moving on, I see your Scotty Fishbowl draft is moving onward towards its conclusion. And this is a draft we've talked about a little bit before. Scotty Fishbowl doing with like 900 teams, for goodness sakes, in different leagues and conferences, that sort of thing. But we've been lighthearted about this already. Scott, you drafted LeSean McCoy in the fourth round of this, you know, kind right. of hours or a day before some of the news came out with them. And then, you know, kind of you were snake bitten once again, potentially, although we don't know how much of an issue this is even going to be because the NFL is so inconsistent with their discipline policies. But you also then got Ricky Seals-Jones in the ninth round. Now, here's what I want to ask you about this draft, Scott. And this is not about, like, we joked about the Ricky Seals-Jones and the auction thing back with Corey and stuff. I'm not talking about any of that. What I'm going to ask you is, though, generally, in this draft, Ricky Seals-Jones for you, he's the guy you liked, but he was the 14th tight end off the board, okay? So you waited on tight end. Talk to me a little bit about your general thinking, why you decided to wait, and not the fact that it was Ricky Seals-Jones, but the fact that you, the first tight end you got was the 14th tight end on the board. Take me a little bit inside your mind as you were letting the draft come to you. How did you think about this here?
That's the biggest thing, you know, letting the draft come to you, which is what I did. And I just, look, the tight ends get extra scoring here.
Okay.
But, you know, I felt like, you know, Seals-Jones was a value I could have waited on. And, you know, I kind of evaluated on a round-to-round basis what tight ends are left because everybody's going for tight end.
I see.
That leaves some other running backs and wide receivers that I really like on the board that I can't pass on. And especially, you know, when McCoy got – the news came out, I kind of had to make an adjustment
right.
in my draft strategy and go a little bit heavier running back in the middle rounds than I wanted to.
Yeah, and you went and you did do that, right? Getting Ronald Jones in the fifth round, Royce Freeman.
It's a slow draft, you know.
Who we've discussed, right? So, and I think one thing you said in that explanation I think is really interesting. I want to drill down a little bit more on, Scott. You said, like, kind of, correct me if I'm wrong, but you said, like, round to round, when you're making a pick, one of the pieces of calculus that you're doing is, like, how many of the tight ends are still left, right? Because
right.
at some point, you know, there's only going to be one left for you, let's say, in your tier, right, of your acceptable people, right? Whoever that is for you, you're going to be like, ah, there's still four guys that I could still get and be comfortable with, so I'm not going to do it this round. Then you wait the next round, and you're like, there's still four guys I'd be comfortable with, so I'm not going to do it this round. Then the next round comes, and you're like, uh-oh, now there's only two that I'd be comfortable with. Maybe I need to pull the trigger. Am I right? Is that the kind of progression of thinking? Is that right?
Yeah, and, you know, especially in the slow draft,
yeah.
you know, that's why we tier our rankings because
right.
I feel like, okay, what tier are we at in wide receiver here?
Uh-huh.
Where are we at running back? Where are we at tight end? And I just felt like, you know, some of these tight ends that I still like are on the board, but I like the wide receivers and running backs even better. And even though that the tight ends have extra scoring, you know, you can start, like, up to seven wide receivers
mm-hmm.
at a time in the Scott Fish Bowl, so... And, you know, I've done very well in the first 2 years of Scott Fishbowl. Last year, I won my conference. The year before, I had the most points in the conference. And I did it up by really loading up heavily on wide receivers.
Okay, fair enough. So I want to – and that's the important part too, right, Scotty? You're saying, like, the calculus is really how many of whatever position it is – are left in that tier, whatever tier you're at, right? And that's where you can – and if there's a lot – that if there's a lot left in that tier that are similar, and we've said that we've made this point when we were talking about Allen Robinson a little bit earlier in the show, right? Like, we're splitting hairs here, so that's why you have to think of it in terms of tiers, right? And you got to say, like, how many running backs are left in this tier? And if there's a lot, you can say, versus how many wide receivers are still left in this tier? And if it's like, this guy who's right there at the top of my draft board at wide receiver is really the last one in this tier, and then there's a big gap to the next one. Meanwhile, at running back or tight end, there's still like three or four in that tier that you're comfortable with. It means that the urgency is greater to grab the wide receiver, and so that's what you do in terms of like letting the draft come to you, right, Scotty?
Exactly, and you
okay.
know the cool thing about a slow draft is you can take a little bit more time, you know, to weigh these decisions, And the unique thing about it is when news happens during a slow draft,
right,
you will have to adjust on the run. And, you know, that's why wrenches got thrown, you know, into the mix with McCoy and Seals Jones, and I had to adjust my later draft strategies.
Right, I hear that. So let's go even further into this, because as you went to select your tight end, okay, I'm looking at the seventh round, Scott, right? And right before you, tight ends go back-to-back. Jimmy Graham and Greg Olsen. You still decide to go running back, though, because at that moment, you were like, nah, there's still whatever it was, three, four, five tight ends that were still that you're still comfortable with there, right? Then, though, correct me if I'm wrong, if this is a snake draft, though, Scott, then by the time it comes back to you, another three tight ends go off the board. Trey Burton, Delaney Walker, and Jack Doyle. But at that point, you are still comfortable enough with what remains to go on and draft in that spot Jarvis Landry. And then by the time it comes back around to you, another three tight ends have gone off the board, and then you decide to pull the trigger with Ricky Seals-Jones. And that's where, like, the idea of – you talk about these tiers. Another thing I think about with the letting the draft come to you is this concept of the runs that get started, right? The tight end run, the quarterback run. Can you talk to me a little bit about when you might anticipate one of those runs and how you get ahead of it as you let the draft come to you?
Anticipating it, you really never can.
Okay.
You just kind of see it happening ahead of you. And, you know, as far as, like, should you get caught up in that run or not, you know, it really depends on how quickly you feel the tiers are dropping off. Sometimes you can start a run by saying you're in the fourth round, and then you're the first guy to pick in a position. All of a sudden, people will join in. And sometimes that kind of plays into who you are in a draft. You know, it's like, you know, like if you're a fantasy expert, you know, like say you're Corey Parson and you're in a draft and you're the first one to take a tight end, people may follow you if they're mainstream players because they think that you know something and they're going to follow you. So, but also, you know, it could really happen in any draft. If you're the first person to take something at a position, or you become the second and then follow the guy ahead of you.
Reinforce
you
the run.
You can start a run like that. The other flip side of the run, though, is that if a lot of guys are coming off at a certain position, and I've seen this in the early fishbowl rounds in the past, if quarterbacks are flying off the board, well, that leaves a great wide receiver running back for me.
Right.
And it was the flip side because it was all running backs this year, so I took Aaron Rodgers at number 9. So you can get a real nice pick at another position if you choose to veer away from the run.
Interesting. Right. You can zig when other people zag. And by definition, if people are kind of like exhausting that tier at one position, that means you're staying at the same point in the tier in these other positions, and it could wind up getting some value. Scotty, any other kind of thoughts you have here from this Scotty Fishbowl League that's happening right now? I mean, as you mentioned, it's almost done. Where you guys are in your division, at least, you're up to round, I think, 21. It looks like
21, yeah.
It looks like Terrell Pryor was the last guy off the board. So let me ask you this. In late rounds, in the very end of rounds, you know, I asked Jake yesterday, and he, towards his late rounds, was drafting a lot of handcuffs. He has guys like Austin Eckler, James Conner, Deontay Foreman. I think he went like 3 out of 4 picks towards the end. What are the kinds of things you're looking for at the tail end of draft? Are you like putting emphasis on maybe younger guys, rookies who have upside and maybe can pop and outperform their ADP? Are you definitely looking to maybe handcuff your studs? What are you doing at the end of drafts? Like, when are you looking to get the defense, kicker, that sort of thing? What's your approach as you let the draft come to you? But what's your approach kind of in the ends of these drafts, say rounds 18 and beyond, when you're filling out your bench?
Well, there is no defense and kicker in the fishbowl, but if you're going to
generally
play in a 20-22 round with the with a defense, you might have to grab, you know, two of each or at least two defenses. And I don't know if I'd necessarily go defense next to last round because, you know, sometimes those deep sleepers you want can still be available. So maybe 3 rounds away from the back or so, you know, I'll grab that defense. Always lead the kicker until last because trends become more apparent in season. You can always pick up somebody off the waiver wire. But, you know, this particular draft, you know, it's just, are there very deep sleepers that are left? Are there guys who may be able to be decent contributors that are still left on the board? You know, I took AJ McCarron as my fourth quarterback because it's a two quarterback league, and you know, if McCarron is decent, I can use him in a bye week. What Jake did with handcuffs is fine, but I was finding in the late rounds that there really weren't a lot of handcuffs that I could use. They might have been gone. I didn't like them, so I went for like a Bilal Powell type, like very late. LeGarrette Blount, which was not so late, but I think that was more like
in the
14th
round.
But I felt like he had a role. You know, very late, like a sleeper like Dante Moncrief, even though I already had Marquise Lee. And then knowing that tight end was very you know, the extra scoring for tight end, the fishbowl, you know, you look for guys that are maybe less heralded sleepers, like a Jake Butt, and then you take him.
Yeah, interesting. And, you know, when we were talking about the Jets before, there were also a little bit of news and notes about the Jets tight end position. Listen, second-year guy Jordan Leggett out of Clemson coming off a knee injury. Also, the Jets drafted in the fourth round this year, Herndon out of Miami. They're looking to replace the targets out of Austin Safarian Jenkins, the Rastafari, King Ali Selassie, Austin Safarian Jenkins, who moved on
Russell.
To Jacksonville. Yeah, now remember, in previous offensive schemes that the Jets have had, they really didn't utilize the tight end. Now Jeremy Bates is bringing more of a West Coast look where they will use the tight end. Do you think when you're talking about these less heralded guys, any opportunity there in the Jets with these young tight ends, Herndon or Leggett? Do you have any insight on either of these guys for the JETS, Jets, Scotty?
Yeah, well, Herndon, well, remedial spelling exercises in the stands for Jet fans, once again. but, you know, Herndon's going to be more of a blocker. Leggett could be a receiver, but you know, tight end, we all know it. We all say it as fantasy analysts, and it's true. You know, there's such a learning curve. You know, Leggett really didn't have a first season yet, so I really can't see them making anything of a fantasy impact. It's more of a thing where, you know, you'll be at a Jet game yourself, and you'll see Leggett catch like maybe a touchdown in the fourth quarter and say that kid has a future, but you know, he's not really going to make anything of a fantasy impact here yet.
Okay, fair enough. I just think with the Jets, I mean, the running back room with Crowell and Powell and McGuire at the wide receiver room, we talked about all the different options there. At tight end, a lot of different options. Well, not a lot, but unclear where it's going to go there. And at the quarterback position also. Listen, McCown, when will he pass the baton to Sam Darnold? And or does Teddy Bridgewater show up? So a lot of questions there about the Jets. And if you think that you can accurately, as Scotty and I say, read the tea leaves, you may in fact get a little bit of value. Last thing I want to say with you real quick, Scotty, one of my followers on Twitter, at Mike Husky, I want to give him a big shout out. He's got a team name.
I know, Mike, yes.
Yeah, that he gave me for consideration. He, Knee, K-N-E-E, Grow, G-R-O-W, Skills. And so his full team name is Negro Skills together. How does that stack up against, you know, Patty Das Mahomes and some of the other ones we talked about?
Yeah,
we don't like that one as much. We can stay away from that.
That gets eliminated on
problematic
correctness. Yeah.
Problematic. The problematic light is on. Scotty, I'll see you again on Monday. I'll talk again on Monday. Have a great weekend. And remember, guys, if you have fun team names, send them to us. We're building our top 10. The All-In Kid joins the fun. Scotty, have a great weekend. All right, brother man?
God gave rock and roll in the exclusive Edge package to you.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts.
Welcome back to Roto Experts in the Morning right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We help you win your leagues and win that cash. I'm your host, Dane Martinez, Speed Spin Statistician, and we bring in, as usual here, the number one accuracy ranker, one of the best experts in the business, my guy, the All-In Kid, Jake Seeley. Jake, how you feeling? It's a summertime Friday. Feeling good? Got any good plans for the weekend? How you doing, brother man?
Yeah, I'm doing good. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right. All right, let's get on into this. And Jake, we got a big show today, okay? We got some news and notes to get into. We're going to finish off our NFC East previews with the New York Football Giants. I know that's a team that you are a fan of, so we'll have to check your objectivity there, although I know that when you have to have your accurate rankings, you try to be as objective as possible. We're going to get into that, and of course, we're going to keep putting the fun in functional sports radio. Here's what I want to get into with you first, okay? We're on the precipice of camps opening up, right? So, like, last week we heard, hey, Kenneth Dixon's going to be a full go. We're hearing that Deshaun Watson seems ready to go. I want to ask you about Allen Robinson, who is also, it looks like, going to be a full go for the beginning of Bears camp. When I look at your wide receiver ranks, Jake, in PPR scoring at least, I see that you have Allen Robinson, it looks like, number 16. Okay, I want to ask this. I mean, 2 years ago, this guy was being drafted as a mid-level wide receiver one, right? And I believe that he's probably in a better system now with a better quarterback than he ever was. I mean, this is a guy who has the unique distinction of making Blake Bortles and Christian Hackenberg look decent. You know, we talk about this Matt Nagy offense coming over from Kansas City. Kansas City never had an outside X wide receiver like Allen Robinson. I know you have him as, I believe it was 16 I mentioned. If everything comes up roses and optimistic for him, talk to me about the ceiling for Allen Robinson in this offense, Jake.
Well, what you said may be true, but it's not. You can't say that for fantasy purposes.
Okay.
The fact is, Allen Robinson was coming off that season, but the fact is, Blake Bortles also threw for 4,400 yards and 35 touchdowns.
Because garbage it was, time.
But it doesn't matter for fantasy. It doesn't matter. So, sure, it's a better offense. Sure, Mitchell Trubisky should be a better quarterback. He's not yet. I mean, let's be honest about that, too. I wrote the article back in January saying he's going to be this year's breakout quarterback. That could definitively not happen. It could actually happen, and it could be. It could be this year's Jared Goff is actually what I said. There's just, so everything you said is right in essence, but to say that, you know, just the fact that he's with Nagy, the fact that the offense should be better, the quarterback should be better, those are things that should be, and those are should be NFL-wise. You know, Allen Robinson, again, coming off an offense where he was seen, the volume and the percentage is what we enjoyed so much about that. We didn't care it was garbage time. That's the appeal. That's why he's 16, is because he should, in an offense where arguably right now your second best option is either Anthony Miller, a rookie, Trey Burton, a tight end who's been a backup to this point of his career, or Taylor Gabriel, who's a slot receiver coming over from the Falcons. So, in essence, part of the reason behind this is I have Allen Robinson for about 23-24% of the share. That's a high percentage. There's only a handful of wide receivers last year that were in the mid-20s. I think only one was even near 27-28% last year, and I think that was Hopkins, but I have to go back and double check.
Was it like Jarvis Landry?
No, it was actually Landry was a little bit lower, but he's still in the 20s. He's still in the 20s. So all that being said, is that's why Allen Robinson could get into the top 10. I don't think he'll get into the elite territory because let's be realistic about the Bears as well. Even if Trubisky breaks out, he's not going to throw for 4,500 yards and 32 touchdowns. Like, this just that's not going to be who he is. So you could get extremely excited, but that probably would it take with that kind of a target share to reach top 10, top 5 levels. So I think 16 could be undercutting him, especially because of the talent. And if we all go back to the draft, I thought he was disrespected and nobody's paid. You know, I've already said this already. The last 3 years, we've been disrespecting the Penn State wide receivers. It's Allen Robinson, it was Chris Godwin, and this year's Deshaun Hamilton. They produce good wide receivers, not much else. Defensively, they have some good players, but not much else in offense. So, yeah.
Saquon Barkley might be something, Jake.
What was the last Penn State running back before him?
Oh, goodness. Could it be all the way back to well, Larry Johnson was a Penn State guy, wasn't he?
Oh, that's what I'm saying. I think that's
right? That's a while back.
That's 15, 20 years ago now?
Something like
since
that.
Since he was in Penn State? Yeah. I'd say it's like, 15, 16 years since he was at Penn State?
I think it's a little bit less, but yeah.
No, I'm going to look right now.
All
right,
but he was like that number one stud. Was he on the Chiefs as the stud before or after Priest Holmes? Because I feel like he was the stud after Priest Holmes, which for me would move it up more towards the mid or late offs.
That was when they were mixing in and going back. Like, it was just the next one up was always amazing
right.
there.
Right. Yeah, they had. They did have a string of dudes there. Like, I think it
boom.
Went.
Boom. Boom. Yeah, 15 yards. NFL draft 2003. Or 15 yards. 15 years. Told you.
Okay, 2003
years.
Was when he was drafted, right? Okay, so he was at Penn State. It was 15 years ago. But
longer
you know,
than that.
Yeah. But Jake, think about that.
No. Hold on.
Go ahead. Give
me respect for nailing that.
No. That was decent. I'll give you that. That was decent.
Not decent. I said 15, and he was that long. So I not decent. I nailed that. You said it was shorter. I nailed it on the head.
I also nailed New Edition yesterday, though, in the late 80s. And, you know, hey. But anyway.
People aren't listening to us for New Edition.
Fair. That's what I said. You were like, nah. Let's talk R&B. And I was like, nah. Let's talk fantasy football. Go ahead, though. Allen Robinson, what were you saying?
No, that was it. That was the end of the story.
All right, fair enough. But that's the thing. And you made a great point that I was thinking about. Think about that string of Kansas City Chiefs running backs they had. Correct me if I'm wrong, Jake, they went from Priest Holmes to Larry Johnson, then maybe to Jamal Charles. So, like, what is that? What is that, like, 10 years of literally, like, top five RB production for the Kansas City Chiefs? Like, that's a nice little
something around that.
That's a nice little stretch, you know, unless there was someone in between Larry Johnson and Jamal Charles that was kind of nondescript.
I kind of feel like there's somebody else in the mix, but unless
there might have been. But I mean, like, that's, you know, that's enjoying a pretty good stretch.
This is the power of the Google machine.
Yeah. GTS.
I know.
As you're doing that, bring that up. I wanted to ask you another question.
That's the exact order. Larry Johnson.
It was, right?
Larry Johnson from 2003 to 2009, Priest Holmes from 2001 to 2007. So they like I said, they did overlap.
Yeah.
And then there was and then Jamal Charles jumped in at 2008. So they all overlapped each other. So it was consistently they just had the next man up.
Do I get credit for that one, Jake?
You had it out of order though.
Yeah, all right. Fine. I was saying they enjoyed an incredible, like, 12-year stretch of production at running back, but I digress. All right, Jakey, we have talked about this Jets wide receiver room for a long time, you know, how many options there are. One of the pieces of news I saw yesterday, Jake, is that a lot of people are priming maybe Robbie Anderson to quote-unquote break out. And I don't know that that's a smart move, Jake, because, listen.
All right, hold on, timeout. Robbie Anderson, timeout. I do want to throw this in here because the fact is, what did you say, 12 years?
Oh, you're talking about we're back to Kansas City running backs?
Yeah,
about that.
It's
15, you know, because if you said it was a 15-year, I'm saying it's 12 because to me, Jamal Charles left like
– it's about 9 or 10.
Okay, fine. Jake finding ways to give me less credit. I appreciate it.
I'm just giving you grief.
Yeah, I know. It's all
Robbie Anderson. Go ahead, Robbie Anderson.
It's a casual Friday here on Roto Experts in the Morning where we put the fun in functional sports radio. And by the way, if you want to join the fun, the number to call is 844-843-6879. But on to Robbie Anderson, Jake. People are saying that he might be the guy to, you know, explode or break out. But, Jake, we have talked about this a lot. When there are so many of these options, I call him the fantasy herd, you know, the value is really on trying to find the guy who's being undervalued, and that is not going to be Robbie Anderson. I'm seeing Robbie Anderson, you know, I'm trying to find him in your ranks, Jake. I know you have him, I believe, as a wide receiver. Well, you have him as 34 in PPR formats, a little bit higher than others. I would say, though, Jake, that maybe the value is on trying to predict who the other guy is going to be, whether that's the Terrell Pryor, the Quincy Enunwa, the Jermaine Kearse. I don't think there's much value in Robbie Anderson, but do me a favor. Try and help me read these tea leaves for the Jets wide receiver room. How do you approach it?
No, I don't think there's value in trying to figure it out.
No?
No, because who's the number two? Who cares who the number two is?
There weren't weeks where Jermaine Kearse was viable last year?
Yeah, and you're going to try and tell me what weeks those are? I'm not plugging that guy in my lineup every single week to try and make sure I get him, and then I'm also not going to try and plug the guy in when those are going to happen because it's, like you said, it's going to be Jermaine Kearse is the number two. Quincy Enunwa is going to be the slot and go back to his hybrid slot, hybrid tight end role that he's always been, which is valuable, but I'm not plugging either one of those guys in my lineup. I will draft Robbie Anderson if he's there as my wide receiver 4. Wide receiver 3 is where I have him finished, but it's the same thing when you go back to the Deshaun Jacksons and the Torrey Smiths and all those of the world is their finish is going to be better than their consistency. Now, Robbie Anderson is more consistent than those guys, but he is a big play option, and he's going to have a wide receiver 3 finish with a wide receiver 4 production, if people understand what I'm saying. I say that about a lot of players every single year is, yes, their value at the end of the season, you're going to be like, oh, look, I had a blankety-blank wide receiver. The week-to-week consistency is going to frustrate you at times, and that's where it comes to roster construction. So Robbie Anderson, I don't want as my wide receiver three. So I actually haven't ended up with a lot of Robbie Anderson. I think I only have him like one or two places. I have zero of a Anunua curse because when I get to that point, I don't want them. I don't want the Jets offense wide receivers. It's just the fact that if one of them was going to consistently always be the number two and always on the field, and you know that I could maybe see if we knew it was going to be curse. But I think Curse and Anunua are going to be flipping around just like the Seahawks, you know, because one is a slot and hybrid and one is the outside guy. When you're a two wide receiver set, that doesn't always mean that you have two outside guys. Sometimes you have a slot and a wide out. Sometimes you have two wide. Sometimes you run that little hybrid offense where nobody's lined up out wide. So it just, that's why I don't really. And then we're going back to the fact that it's either Josh McCown or a rookie in Sam Darnold.
Fair enough. I'm holding out hope that Teddy Bridgewater can blow everyone away also, but we shall see about
2009,
that.
We can talk about it. 19, I mean.
Right, 2019, potentially. We'll see. To your point, though, Jake, and I'd love for us to spend just a little bit more time on that concept that you mentioned that, you know, when you look at the back of his card at the end of the year or on that screen, he'll have wide receiver three numbers, but you view him as like wide receiver four production, and that's part of it because of that whack-a-mole, right, that week to week. Yeah, he may at the end of the season have that, but you don't know which weeks it's going to be, and sometimes he pops off, he's going to be on your bench, and sometimes, you know, that sort of thing. And is that kind of what you're getting into, that level of frustration and the lack of consistency is what pushes him down? And if that's the case, Jake, can you talk to me a little bit more about like floor and upside? You said at the wide receiver three, is that the level where you're kind of looking for a more safe floor? And at what points of your roster might you be looking for more upside or potential? Because I've heard things like that about your first round pick also, right? You want to draft the stable, safe, kind of safe stud that you could rely on week to week. Where are those places in the draft where you may be more likely, or on your roster construction, where you may be more likely to take a gamble on some upside, Jake? Because it sounds like wide receiver three is not necessarily that place for you.
There's nowhere in specific because you're going back to what I keep saying is you can't give a flat answer. There's not it's not a, hey, this is what you always do at this type of situation. This is you go out there and depending on what your roster ends up being constructed, then you adjust. If you've already taken somebody like Amari Cooper, who's your number two, or even your number one, and somebody, you don't want to necessarily pair him with Robbie Anderson because now you're going to have volatility every single week with two of your wide receivers. Mm-hmm. If you've gotten the Crabtree as your three and another wide receiver like Crabtree as your two, and you're trying to think of somebody off the top of my head, like a Marvin Jones, you know, something like that, then you know what? Okay, roll the dice on Robbie Anderson. It really comes down to your roster construction. In the first round, no, it's, you know, I don't care which way you go in the first round. If the best value on the best value is on the board and is you're going to go with Odell Beckham, who is a little bit volatile, he's also got Eli Manning, who might be toast at this point in his career, is going to be a lot more risky than a Todd Gurley or Ezekiel Elliott or even Kareem Hunt. So it just comes down to where you are in the draft, and then you just have to adjust by what's there.
Okay, fair enough. So if I hear you correct, it's not necessarily a specific position or a specific portion of the draft, but what it is continuously kind of like relative to the rest of the roster that you have on your team. You know what I mean? So like if you have a lot of kind of potential upside guys, then you may need to start think about getting some more stability. If you already in the middle of your draft have a lot of safe or floor guys, then you can take more of a chance to kind of swing for the upside as, and that is part of, Jake, correct me if I'm wrong, that's part of letting the draft come to you, understanding the kind of stability or risk of your current roster and balancing it out appropriately. Is that more safe to say, Jake?
Yeah.
All right, cool. So you mentioned Odell Beckham as part of this. And so we're going to move on, Jake, to our team-by-team previews. We're finishing up the NFC East with the New York Football Giants, a team that, listen, there's a lot of intrigue around on a number of levels. Okay, you know, the return of Odell Beckham. What will Saquon Barkley do? Is Eli Manning toast? Will their offensive line progress at all? Can Evan Engram back up his rookie season. And that's where I want to start, Jake. You know, I've mentioned this before, how Evan Engram kind of bucked the trend of the rookie tight ends by being successful in year one. I always make the point that Odell Beckham was not on the field. Sterling Shepard was not on the field for some of that time. They lost Brandon Marshall. It was like Evan Engram, or the other option was like Roger Lewis, who I don't want to be disparaging to because we have had him inside Studio 34 during our NFL draft coverage. But those things are not necessarily the case. Odell's going to get his. Saquon's going to get his. Talk to me, Jake, about what you expect. Here's what I want to say, specifically Evan Engram and Sterling Shepard, right? Like, because you know Odell's getting his targets. You know Saquon's going to be a big part of this offense. Who of those two guys do you think is going to, I guess for lack of a better term, sacrifice the most or see their slice of the pie diminish from, say, the end of last year where those were like the two most prolific weapons the Giants had? Now you're going to have Odell and Saquon. Who do you think feels the crunch of the slice of the pie more, Shepard or Evan Engram?
No one. This is
no one. You think the pie grows?
Look, well, look at what Eli did last year. 3,400 yards, 19 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. The pie doesn't get bigger than everybody's a bust.
It's
got to anyway.
Get bigger than that, right? If it's not that, then it's Buffalo.
Then the only two people that are going to have value are Barkley and Odell Beckham if the pie doesn't get bigger. If Eli Manning is done, if he is down there with Jordy Nelson at the bottom of a ravine after falling off a cliff and hitting every right. damn rock on the way down, then it's going to be Odell Beckham and Saquon Barkley, and their numbers aren't even probably going to be what people paid for them if that's how right. bad Eli Manning's season is. Let's be real. So the fact is, if Eli Manning bounces back, he doesn't even have to get to the 4,400 yards and 30-plus touchdowns that he did 2 years in a row. He gets back to 41, 4,200, 28 mm-hmm. touchdowns. Nothing. It's what I said earlier this week and last week. The pie will have gotten bigger. Evan Engram can get less targets, be a little bit more efficient on it, but the targets aren't going to fall off that much where he can put up the same exact numbers he did last year. Sterling Shepard can put up the same exact numbers last year. Maybe he loses a touchdown or two. This team can still produce all four of these guys with value, including a new rookie in Saquon Barkley, and be fine. You know, he also doesn't have the numbers that you're talking about for last year. Is, as you said, it's those are the people. It's going to be no more Roger Lewis. It's going to be no more Brandon Marshall for the first couple of games until he got hurt. It's going to be no more Tavarius King and Khalif Raymond and all those other rest of the pieces that were making up the numbers that were there.
Gotcha. So it does look like these roles get solidified and they have four legit weapons, which is, you know, better than a lot of teams when you talk about Barkley out of the backfield, the two legit wide receivers, and then obviously the tight end as well. Jake, here's my question for you as it relates to Saquon Barkley. I think I've bounced this off you once before and you poo-pooed my idea. But if you look at Saquon Barkley, going into the draft, one of the only knocks on him that I saw, the only thing that kind of prevented him from what people think him being like the perfect prospect, is that he seems on film to be one of those guys that tries to break every single run for the big one, you know, and sometimes that'll happen, and that's great. But sometimes it winds up he's doing a little bit too much and it winds up with a negative one carry, right? It's like sometimes he doesn't just accept that the play is blocked for 3 yards. I'm going to just put my head down and go get those 3 yards. And that's a dicey game with a, let's just say, less than average offensive line. Now, I know they got Nate Solder from the Pats at left tackle. I know they really liked the guard out of UTEP that they drafted, Will Hernandez. But you still got Ereck Flowers, who's pretty much a turnstile on the right side. I mean, I know I'm trying to like grasp at hairs here, but does the offensive line plus Saquon Barkley's running style, trying to go all in all the time, could that be an issue for Saquon?
No, I'm not concerned about that at all. The fact is, he was still looking to make every single play because he was that good, and he could. And people are kind of overreacting that. They're trying to pick out. It's basically people trying to say, here's a perfect prospect. What can we find negative about him?
Yeah, I'm splitting hairs, yeah.
No, and I'm not saying – I'm saying everybody. That's just kind of how people are looking at this. And, if that's going to be your only issue, I'll take it. I'd rather that be an issue than anything else. And I'd rather him be looking for the big plays because sometimes you're probably going to need to do it on yourself because it is. It is an imperfect line. It is one with questions. So, no, I'm not – I don't think this is going to stop his season from being amazing at all.
Okay, I certainly hope so. I mean, the kid was raised in the Bronx, as I am. The kid, don't get it twisted. He also, I don't know if you know this, Jake. I don't know if you're a fan of the fight game, but his uncle is a former middleweight champion of the world, Irad Barkley. He was a boxing champion in like the late 80s, early 90s. That's Saquon's uncle. So, you know, good genes there, you know. And then let me ask you this, though, Jake.
Okay.
I just think it's interesting, you know.
Whatever. Okay.
Plug for the fight game and plug for the Bronx. You know, I told you when we're talking about Big Pun how impartial the rappers from the Puerto Ricans from the Bronx. You know what I mean? But in any event, we move on. Here's what I want to ask you, though, Jake. And I see this a couple times. Like, for example, when people put Big Ben really far, like kind of as in the mid-teens, let's say, in their rankings, but they have Lev Bell as their number one running back. They have Antonio Brown as their number one wide receiver. It seems confusing to me, right? Because if you think that both of them are going to have so much production, by definition, some of that helps with Big Ben. And so I find the same question. People think Saquon Barkley will be a stud out of the backfield. People think Odell Beckham is a true first-round draft pick. You like Evan Ingram to maybe maintain production, Sterling Shepard, all that stuff. If all of those things are true, then how are people ranking Eli Manning in the 20s? Like, if all these people are going to get all this production, like, the shepherd of this herd is Eli Manning. So talk to me about why Eli Manning, then, is still ranked in the 20s on so many people, including yourself, if you believe that Barkley's a stud and Beckham's a stud and that there's production to go around for Shepard and for Ingram, then why doesn't Eli Manning rise in most people's rankings, Jake?
Because it's the fact of what the position is nowadays. Okay. Rich Hribart was the one that tweeted out a couple weeks ago and said, no quarterback in fantasy has ever had a top 14, or top, or what, basically it was running back one, a wide receiver one, a tight end one, all on the same team, and hasn't finished as the top 14 quarterback. Well, Eli Manning is 21 for me, or no, wait, 23. But look at what I have for the projections, 4,126. That's a bounce back season. That's a really good season for Eli Manning compared to last year. But 4,100 to 26 touchdowns doesn't get you jack squat at touchdown or quarterback anymore. That's right. Kind of the point. This is to compare it to fantasy baseball, where we're now saying like 15 home runs. Who cares? Everybody gives me 15 home runs. I need more. Well, the quarterback position is who gives me 4,000 yards and 25 touchdowns? Everybody. I don't need that. Do you offer rushing ability? Eli Manning does nothing running the ball. That's a big issue there. You jump up to Dak Prescott above him, who actually has less yardage passing, less touchdowns, but nearly 300 rushing yards and 3 rushing touchdowns more than makes up for that difference and moves him ahead of him, because that's where it is. Rushing yards, 1 for 10 versus 1 for 25 passing. Touchdowns on the ground, 6 for rushing versus 4 for passing. That's just how it comes down to. So Eli Manning is bouncing back as I have him. He has value with those players. All those players are ones at their position. But, you know, again, 4,000 yards and 24, 25 touchdowns is, I could go that, do that in the NFL type of thing. Not that I could. I'm just saying that's kind of
the baseline has changed, given the fact that we've evolved into such a passing league. You have a greater percentage of, you know, NFL quarterbacks hitting what used to be that threshold of, say, 4,000 yards. And you made a great point, Jake, the same kind of thing about, say, where home runs are in Major League Baseball, right? It used to be a big deal to have, say, a middle infielder be able to hit you 20 home runs. Now, you know, you can almost bunt the ball over the wall 20 times, you know, with the launch angle and all that good stuff. So I hear you that the overall kind of perception, or the, I think the term is, what is it? Someone's window, like Occam's window or something like that, has been shifted slightly over because of the evolution. Oh man, you gotta get, these are like philosophical theories, but like the entire standard deviations have been shifted a little bit when we talk about the statistics of it all. So that makes, relatively speaking, Eli can bounce back, can get to say 4,200 yards, but that still is not what it used to be in the eyes of fantasy football. Jake, here's the other question. I want to ask you about the Giants, okay? And I tried to bounce this off Scott last hour as well. You talked about how, you know, Odell could be a one in his position.
Did you ask him about Achman's window too, or whatever it was?
I did not. We did not get into that, but I'll tell you. It's actually Occam's razor and someone else's window.
There you go. I don't remember what it was a reference to. I've heard the term Occam's razor then.
Okay. But this other one is someone else's window. But that's what we're talking about. How, like, the view of, like, acceptable responses. Think about this.
Who's that peeping in my window? You know that one.
Right? Who's that peeping in my window?
Yeah, so there you go.
But yeah, just think about it in terms of the bell curve, Jake. Like, the bell curve has shifted for passing yards in the NFL over the last 10 years. Make sense?
Okay. That's fine. All.
And that window is like the one standard deviation from the norm on both sides.
With,
if you call that
Ahmed's
the window.
Razor or whatever it was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that whole window has shifted. But I digress. Let's get away from that real quick.
sure.
What I was going to say is you mentioned that, you know, Saquon is an RB1. You mentioned that Odell is an RB1, right? And the comparison that we've drawn before, I think, with you and me is to Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown. Now, they may not be at the level of Bell and Brown, but here's my question for you, Jake, and we may have to discuss this a little bit more when we come back. But if I acknowledge that Lev Bell and Antonio Brown are the number one running back wide receiver combo in the NFL. And I'm just going to, you know, I'm just going to give us that because, you know, they're both like number one overall potential in some people's rankings. My question is, are Saquon and Odell the second best combo in the NFL? And here's some ones to consider, Jake, before we go to break. You know, you talk about Saquon and Odell Beckham. I think about the guys in Atlanta, Julio Jones, Devontae Freeman. I think about the Chargers, Melvin Gordon and Keenan Allen. I think about the Cardinals, you know, Larry Fitzgerald and David Johnson. I think about the Saints, Michael Thomas, and, you know, your choice, I guess, of Alvin Kamara or Mark Ingram. Maybe Minnesota, your choice again of with Dalvin Cook and then Adam Thielen or Stephon Diggs. I wonder if we throw away Lev Bell and Antonio Brown, are Saquon and Odell the best running back wide receiver tandem in the NFL, or is it one of the other ones that I mentioned or something else, Jake? What do you think?
On paper, they are. On paper. This is, you know, everything we're projecting. If Saquon Barkley is what we think he is,
right,
then absolutely. And funnily enough, I have an article, I think it's going to be next week, is the best fantasy trios.
Oh, like ranking. Triplets, right?
Ranking 1 to 32, all 32 teams, the trios, the best trio for every team ranked out.
And is the trio, just to clarify, Jake, is running back, wide receiver, and QB, or running back, wide receiver, and tight end?
No, it's whatever the best trio is. It could be of the three. It could be running back, wide receiver.
Got you. So it could be like Cook, Thielen, and Diggs, for example.
It could be.
Okay, could be. Well, that's interesting. Definitely check that out in the Roto Edge exclusive package. We'll be talking a little bit more about fantasy football. It's the all-in kid and the spitting statistician off and running here. It's Roto Experts in the Morning on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things, just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Hey, Jake, we were talking about the Fugees a little bit yesterday as we're back here on Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We put the fun in functional sports radio. Jake, when you're a teenager in the Bronx and one of your boys, maybe a little bit older, maybe has a car, one of the things you do to kill some time is you drive around the Bronx and hang out. My boy was named Ralph Hernandez, and when this song came out, it was always like, boys, you know you better. Watch Ralph, and we used to always say watch Ralph instead of watch out. Just a little bit of insight into Speeds growing up in the BX.
I used to like the Fugees until I found out about her.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. Lauryn Hill has done a lot of things. Damian Marley.
Let's just put it this way. She doesn't like me.
By default, she probably likes me more than you, right, Jake?
Basically everybody else besides me.
Yeah, fair enough. But I digress here. We're putting the fun in functional sports radio as we slide into another weekend on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Jake, one of the things we do here, we break down some of the people. You were saying the pie is going to grow, and you can worry about take Saquon as an RB1. You can take Odell as a wideout one. Evan Ingram may still be okay because the size
size of the entire Giants pie will grow. I look at the season one win total, Jake, over at mybookie.ag. And by the way, guys, you need to go on over to mybookie.ag because you need to deposit some funds right now for the football season. But when you do, enter the promo code FNTSY. You'll get a 50% deposit bonus at checkout. Oh, no, excuse me. That's you entering all in, kid. You get a 50% deposit bonus. You get a 50% deposit bonus at mybookie.ag with the promo code FNTSY. I butchered that, Reed. I apologize, MyBookie, but I talk about it all the time anyway. And if you go to mybookie.ag, you will see, Jake, that the Giants season win total is at 6.5. I already told you, I'm staying away from the Eagles over-under. I'm staying away from the Washington football team's over-under. I'm under on the Cowboys. I am over on the New York football Giants at 6.5. To your point, Jake, bounce back from Eli Manning. Maybe the offensive line gets a little bit better. And then look, listen, Jacksonville, when they draft Leonard Fournette, skyrocketing in their win-loss record. Ezekiel Elliott in the top five. The Dallas Cowboys get better. Todd Gurley and the impact he's had on the Rams. I expect Saquon to do the same thing. I mean, the Giants have been toiling with guys like Orleans Darkwa and Shane Vereen, you know, and Wayne Gallman over the last couple of years. And the gap that Saquon Barkley should provide them, I am going over to mybookie.ag, and I'm betting the over on the New York football Giants at 6.5. What do you say, Jake?
Yeah, I'm betting the over too. If I'm betting, I'll tell you right now, I'm actually staying away from this one.
Really?
Because the difference between those teams, and when you mentioned about the Giants, is the Cowboys had a decent defense at the time. The Giants also have a decent defense, but they had an amazing offensive line, and they still had Dez Bryant in his prime, which is okay. Odell Beckham, and they also had good quarterback play. Well, that's a question: are they going to get good quarterback play? Is their offensive line on the par with the Cowboys? No. Is it even a par with the Cowboys' offensive line this year, which is not the same offensive line that they had when Ezekiel Elliott was drafted?
No.
Still at least probably 15 teams away from them offensive line wise. The Jaguars were a piece or two or three away. This is why last year I was saying I don't mind that they're taking Leonard Fournette as early as they are. Now, I would still never draft a running back real life. I would never spend the draft capital on a running back. If I was them, I would have looked elsewhere and taken Hunt later. And obviously people are going to say that looks like hindsight 2020. Right. But people also know my stuff is known as I was very high on Hunt from day one. Or even Dalvin Cook in the second round.
Sure.
The point being, I wouldn't invest that capital, but I understood it because the Jaguars didn't need anything besides a running back, a tight end, and a quarterback last year.
It could have been that defense piece to put them over
right.
the top.
So that's where I think it's a little bit different. The Giants definitely need a running back, but don't disparage what Darkwa did last year. Darkwa was actually one of the more productive runners after contact in all of football last year and averaged over 4 yards per carry. Gallman, well, Wayne Gallman was always best served as being a complimentary pass-catching type of option anyway. It was still performing. That backfield still had 1,300-plus rushing yards, as bad as it was. So, all that being said, Saquon Barkley is going to improve this team because you bring a weapon like that, somebody who could get 1,700-1,800 by himself, mm-hmm. and that's not rushing, that's total.
Combined.
That's good. Yeah, and then you have Odell Beckham, but at the same time, it's Odell Beckham, it's Saquon Barkley, it's Ingram and Shepard, but it hinges a lot on what is left with Eli Manning. And then if you look at the defense, the secondary, you start with questions as soon as you get to the second corner. And Eli Apple, is his problems going to be fixed? Is he getting out of his own
Which
head?
Which problems exactly, Jake? Which
well,
problems?
You know, and then that's the thing. No, but I mean, that's the thing. And then they drafted that Beal kid from Western Michigan. They gave him a 4-year contract immediately. That's obviously had draft, this yeah. in plans. But see, they had that as plans because look at the corners after Eli Apple. It's a bunch of castaways and retreads. And so you know, William Gay is potentially their number three corner. And then you look at the linebackers, which have been ignored for this team forever. They have draft picks that should start on the defensive line at the linebacker position. They have no pass rush outside of Olivier Vernon, and he fell off last year in the pass rush. But the defense is just not that good for what they need it to be and converting to a 3-4. I don't know that I would – that's what I'm saying. I don't know that I would bet this.
All right, so cause for pause. You're right. Their only true pass rusher is Vernon. Remember, they lose JPP and all 7.5 of his fingers. And
look, I wouldn't be surprised. I said this about this entire division. I wouldn't be surprised if any of them win the division. I'd be surprised if any of them, except for the Eagles, finished 5-11. Yep. That's the thing. I can see the Eagles not winning the division just because, you know, maybe somebody else steps up. And like I said, that wouldn't shock me. I would still put the money on the Eagles to win the division as of today. But mm-hmm. you tell me the Cowboys, the Redskins, or the Giants, you're telling me right now and said, guess what? One of them's finishing 5-11. I'd say, right. I bet you one of them's finishing 5-11. But which one?
Right. And it's interesting, Jake. I'm going to draw the analogy to some other divisions. If you throw the Eagles out, right, and you accept that they are a good NFL team, isn't it kind of similar to like the AFC North, where we believe in the Steelers, but the other three teams could all wind up 6-10? Or what about the AFC East, where we believe in the Patriots, but all other three teams can win 5 or 6 games? Isn't it? Do you think that that's a fair kind of comparison? Because I get you. Washington, the Giants, and the Cowboys, I don't know who's finishing 2nd, 3rd, and 4th in this division.
I think those are good comparisons, although the AFC East is that's a completely different ballgame.
That's just the gap from the bats to the dregs of society.
That's the Patriots, and you could have three teams with a top 5 draft pick.
I kind of feel the same way about the AFC North, Jake.
No,
I believe it can unravel in Cincy and Baltimore. I think it could completely unravel.
I definitely do think as well, but they'll switch to Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. That defense is too good to keep him from being 5 wins. And then,
Fair enough. But, Jake, yeah. couldn't Cleveland win 5, Cincy win 6, and Baltimore win 6? Like, that's definitely within, whoever's window.
One of them's winning at least 7.
All right, I don't know, because I look then at the AFC South, and they're going to beat each other up.
But that doesn't matter. You also just said 6s. I'm talking about top 5 picks. So I'm telling you, as of today, look, we'll put it right now. We'll put it on the record. July 20th, 2018, the AFC East will have 3 teams in the top 5 of the draft next year.
Really? I don't think I can go that far. I think one of those 3 teams will win 6 games, which it will keep them out of the top 5.
So they have 6th? All right, I'll say top 6. There you go. So half of the top 6 picks are AFC East teams.
Here's what I'll say. Here will be my other side of this, okay, Jake? I'll say that the 2nd-place team in the AFC North will pick after the 2nd-place team in the AFC East. You know what I mean? So, like, let's say it's whichever of those teams that we think that does poke their head up and gets an – I think whoever pokes their head up in the AFC East –
making it all complicated.
Hey, come on, you're the all-in kid. You're with me. You know.
No,
exactly
I'm just saying they make it all complicated. If you want to take the other side of it, you're obviously taking the other side. I said my statement. So we're on one side. You're on the other side of the bet.
So I'm saying that the dregs are the AFC North. You're saying the dregs are the AFC East.
I'm not even saying the dregs. I'm saying half of the top 6 picks next year will be AFC East teams.
All right, I will take the other side of that one, but we shall see. Jake, let me ask you this. Oh, no, I mentioned that you do believe that, you know, Odell and Barkley could be on paper the 2nd best squad. We do give you our take on the Giants season win totals. Here's what I want to say. Jake, you know I'm a Jets fan, so I definitely wanted to get to this. Darrell Revis and Revis Island retired this week, and we didn't have a chance to really talk about this. And here's the way I want to flip it. I saw a stat. I retweeted it on my timeline. Follow me, at Spittin' Speeds. Jake, Darrell Revis had 3 games in his career against Terrell Owens. 3 games in his career against Randy Moss, and 3 games in his career against Megatron Calvin Johnson, okay? In those 9 games combined, Jake, those 3 guys in 9 games combined against Revis for 21 catches, 191 yards. That's like just over 2 catches and 20-some-odd yards a game for 2 current and 1 obvious Hall of Fame wide receivers putting up that kind of projection against Darrell Revis. In those 9 games, those 3 wide receivers combined for a grand total of 2 touchdowns, and Darrell Revis had 2 interceptions. Darrell Revis, this side of Deion Sanders, was the greatest cornerback in my lifetime. Jake, what do you think? Was Revis like the best you've seen recently at actually shutting down corners, Revis Island, that sort of thing? And then I just want to spin it forward to, like, who's that guy in today's NFL where you got to worry about if you have a wide receiver and they're playing this team that you really got to worry about it? Like, is it Minnesota and Xavier Rhodes? Is it A.J. Bouye? No. Is it Patrick Peterson? No. That sort of thing. So first a little bit on Revis, and then who, if anybody, are you scared of with your wide receivers? Is it Lattimore? You know, that sort of thing.
No.
What do you think about the cornerbacks here, Jake?
At his peak, he was, but the
Revis?
Problem was, he fell off that peak really hard and really fast.
But maybe at 3 years, maybe?
I think it was even longer than that. I'd say it was a good I'd say four. I go back and look. I don't know.
He was a first-team All-Pro. He was a first-team All-Pro four
I feel
times.
Like it was like four or five. Yeah. Okay, so there you go. I was going to say, I feel like it's been 4 or 5 years that he was at his peak where it was that fearsome. And then he fell off in a big way because he lost a step. And, you know, that's
what
comes
to his ACL, Jake.
He lost a step, didn't he? So anyway, the case being is, yeah, absolutely. You didn't want to face Darrell Revis, and you mentioned the names against them. There were some people that put up a game or two, but it was rare. And that's the thing. And then
I'm reminded
all the names,
T.Y. Hilton, one catch for 1 yard in the playoffs against him.
That's fair. I mean, do you want to keep going on about him, or do you want to let me answer the question?
No, go ahead. Tell me who you think are the guys maybe now.
It's not the guys. I've already said no to everybody you said. There's only one person. It's Jalen Ramsey. It's not even a question. Jalen Ramsey is top five player in the NFL. Not top five corner, not top five defensive player, top five player in the NFL. If you gave me five people to start a team with, Jalen Ramsey is going to be one of those five. Jalen Ramsey is Darrell Revis in the fact that you do not want to see Jalen Ramsey on your schedule because Jalen Ramsey means you're toast. You're done for the day. And that's what basically Darrell Revis did, and that's what Jalen Ramsey is doing now. I was exceptionally high on him coming out, just like a lot of people were. I wanted the Giants to take him. I wanted them to. Did I think he was going to be this good? No. Even as excited and good as I thought he was, I did not think he was going to be this good. Because some people forget. They were joking around. Not joking around. It was kind of tongue-in-cheek of trying to get him to play two-way, you know, because of how good he was and all his ability. So you remember. Like, people forgot that about him as people were making that rumor when he came. Like, oh, remember Deion Sanders, as you just said, you know, maybe we can get him, you know, it's a couple trick plays. Maybe we can get him on offense here and there. But that's because of how talented he was. There were some people, I think I saw it was either this week or last week, Lewis Riddick was talking about that. He was a little bit off of him. He was one of the people that was cooler on him than anybody else. Huh. But at this point, admits that he did everything. He addressed every concern. He is as elite as they come. So I'm, like I said, I don't see anybody else in the league, honestly, on Jalen Ramsey's tier. I think it's him and then everybody else.
Fair enough. And, you know, I will also add this. Maybe not on his tier, but don't sleep on A.J. Bouye as a top-end corner either. Also in Jacksonville. You know, he had a great season with Houston, then signs in Jacksonville and has backed it up. So I say that to mean, okay, you say Ramsey and Bouye may be, like, one of the best combos. I know there's a great combo
not
in
one
Minnesota.
Of, that is the best.
Well, that's a great combo. I mean, what about say Verrett and Hayward in the Clippers?
No.
Okay.
The Clippers.
Excuse me. Right. The Chargers. I was like, remember it's Los Angeles.
The LAC. LAC is the Clippers. Yeah,
what about Minnesota? What Rhodes? Rhodes
no.
And
I don't care. No. The answer is no, Dane. This is the best duo. And even the metrics from Pro Football. This is the best duo in the NFL. If you want to talk about.
Peterson and Tlaib?
No. It's just the fact is, like, so to go back to Ramsey. So it's Ramsey, and then we'll talk about Rose and Bouye and Peterson, and all those guys are on that next tier together. And it's an elite tier. This is like fantasy football wide receivers. Here's a perfect example. This is like the Antonio Brown and then the other ones. Odell Beckham, DeAndre Hopkins. And it's not that big of a gap. It's just we know Antonio Brown is his own tier. This is the same thing. It's Jalen Ramsey, and then everybody else is close. They're just on their own tier. And when you're talking about the fact that you have the person in his own tier, this would be like taking Antonio Brown and adding Mike Evans to him because A.J. Bouye is on that next tier. So that's why it's the best duo in football.
So then talk to me about this, Jake. Talk to me about, like, in season long, right, in season long formats, let's say you've got T.Y. Hilton, and that week when they're playing Jacksonville or other, like, how much does that impact your view of the wide receiver going up against Jacksonville that week? And I mentioned T.Y. Hilton because they're in the same division, right? And, like, you're not sitting T.Y. Hilton from his, like, high-end
maybe
wide receiver too, or are you? I guess. So that's my question. Like, how much of an impact does this have? How much are you willing to go on a week-to-week basis? Are you really taking your wide receiver 4 on your roster and starting him over T.Y. Hilton when they face the Jags? Like, how much of an impact does this have, Jake?
It comes out – well, this is why I do projections. It comes down to it. You just got to project out the opportunity there and what will likely be the targets lost and what is Hilton's catch rate and yardage. And so it's a distinct possibility you might be sitting T.Y. Hilton for somebody else that week.
Wow. So there you have it. Like, that's really how important this is. And is it only Jacksonville, Jake, or do you do this? Do you also do this with the other guys we were talking about? You know, if it's Peterson or Rhodes or, let's say, Marshawn Lattimore, are you doing anything similar if they're facing the Saints? Are you doing anything similar if they're facing the Chargers and Haywood of Arrett? Or is it only Jacksonville?
It may be the Chargers, but it wouldn't be a Hilton. It's only the Jacksonville because you have somebody else that's elite with him on the other side as well. You're just not getting away from it.
Got you on both sides. So you're going to try to attack, say, Jason Verrett. You're going to try to attack Mike Hughes, Terrence Newman, whoever it is in Minnesota. You're going to try to attack Marcus Peters with the Rams, let's say. Interesting, but definitely something to consider when you think about your wide receivers going into fantasy football. Jake, have a great weekend, man. The number one accuracy ranker in the business. We'll talk again on Monday, continuing to put the fun in Functional Sports Radio. Carton and Friends up next. This has been another edition of Roto Experts in the Morning. Have a great weekend, Jake. We'll be right back.